Welcome to the Business in Development podcast, a podcast brought to you by the Center for Business and Development Studies at Copenhagen Business School. With this podcast, we wish to bring you the latest insights from our research on the roles of business, government, and civil society in promoting inclusive and sustainable development in the Global South. With this podcast, we wish to create a platform for a wide variety of actors and to combine conversations with thought leaders, practitioners, world-leading experts, and voices from the field.
Welcome to Study Talks Beyond Textbooks and Borders, a podcast created by 30 students from Copenhagen Business School in collaboration with our peers at Makere University Business School in Kampala, Uganda. As part of our international field study, we left the classroom and stepped into the real world, conducting interviews, exploring local markets, and researching what entrepreneurship, sustainability, and innovation look like in a different context. Through this series, we'll hear our reflections, the voices of local entrepreneurs, and the lessons we learn, not from textbooks, but from real people and places. Today's episode is about trash, or rather, what we call trash. In Kampala, a new generation of artists is turning plastic, scrap metal, and discarded fabric into powerful works of art. And in doing so, they're challenging how we think about waste, sustainability, and the role of creativity in entrepreneurship. Our guests today are Michelle from Copenhagen Business School, Lisa from Copenhagen Business School, and Klein from Makere University Business School. You can also quickly introduce yourselves.
Thank you very much. Klein Sintiza Kajubi Michael, and I'm a student of Makere University Business School. And I'm doing a master's in business administration and in my first year. And I'm currently volunteering.
Yes, hello, I'm Lisa. As you said, I'm from CBS Copenhagen Business School. And I studied the diversity and change management program.
It's Michelle, and I'm also in the diversity and change management program at Copenhagen Business School. And I'm from Sweden.
Nice. Thank you so much for introducing yourselves. And globally, sustainability is no longer a side issue. It's a survival strategy. But in Uganda, it's not just about carbon footprint or climate targets. It's about making use of what's around you, solving real problems and creating beauty from what others throw away. Our students, researchers, spend time in markets, workshops and studios across the city, interviewing local artists who use waste as their main medium. What did they learn? Let's find out. So first, what surprised you most when you started talking to local artists about their work with waste?
I think for me, I feel like they were so passionate about what they're doing, and they could really see so much potential in how they could turn waste into something like meaningful for the communities. I think that was really surprising that they were really talking about as their whole life. It was really inspiring to hear.
I think I agree on that, especially the community part was quite big as well. It was all about getting people together and creating the safe space. It's not only about waste management, It's about community. So I think that was quite a big thing for me.
Yeah, I think I do agree with most of the observations. I think for me it's more of like the view in terms of sustainability and art, because traditionally art has like the stories told are not exactly something to do like the environment or changing the community. And like you said, it's surprising that it's not about like corporate targets of some sort for a company that's following policy. And it's good to look into like people who are trying to contribute towards change like by themselves without waiting for like a government or a bureaucratic structure or some sort of forced to push them in that direction. Mm-hmm. And that like brings genuine change rather than like, I would say, a change that is like not really like from within, or I would say. Yeah. It's more like intrinsic. So it's yeah, that's been a very nice experience, at least for me, like, changed my whole view in terms of what is sustainability. It's not just like about trash alone, but can people actually continue having these skills? Can the society continue living on beyond today, beyond just this year? So I think to me that's something that stood out for me when I was there.
Did you ever work with it before?
No, I've actually not. It's my first time really seeing. I've seen people who have been into different initiatives, but not in terms of the way they're doing it, like employment or using arts to actually do something valuable and productive. Most people have initiatives, but they're more like, let's pick up garbage and dump it somewhere else and things like that, or donating to orphanages. But in terms of like the making economic value out of this, it's something that's a bit new to me. Yeah.
I think also generally we know sustainability as something that is about making profit as well in organizational settings. So in this case, it was really inspiring to see that they actually mostly do it for the social change and they don't really make profit out of these initiatives.
Yeah, and I feel like it also very much see it as their lifestyle. And it's like, yeah, they put a lot of effort in it and it's not only about, as you say, or like, I feel like purpose over profit came up as a topic in a lot of the interviews.
So it was more about the passion and the group that was started.
Yeah, expressing their voice kind of through art as well.
I mean, they definitely try to make it profitable and to some extent because they want to be self-sustaining in the organizations, but they do that through still recycling waste and trying to get community into the organization as well and creating opportunities for other people. So it's not necessarily a main goal to make profit. It's more about being self-sustaining.
For us to get a bit of a better understanding, what was, for example, one product, one piece of art where you were like, maybe you can give us as an example. We can understand a bit better.
I mean, I think the first initiative we visited was Plastic Talks, and they're making like these plastic sculptures out of plastic bottles. And we also got to make these little, what's it called, spids. Yeah. And they make like balloons of these pieces and kind of put it together into a sculpture that they try to tell a story through their sculptures.
And they're huge.
They're like, yeah.
3 meters high. Mm-hmm. Really, really. Really cool.
Yeah. But I think then we also visited another organization called Masterpiece Development Foundation, and they were more into the glass kind of recycling, I would say. So we also got to participate, and they create the glasses and all sorts of...
They create like art pieces, like you have a drawing and then they put the glass onto the drawing, sort of like there's a particular kind of arts that they call it. Like you put the glass pieces to make like a bird or something on top of like the normal art. And then we met an artist, he's called Henry, and he's experimenting melting plastic onto the canvas and then to make art pieces. It was actually interesting because like melting, it's a complicated process, so I would like to see how it goes in the future. It's like a new forming art, yeah.
It was really cool also to see that they all do different things, so they all were specialized in using a specific material. So Henry, for example, used the plastic. There was another one using the glass and all that. Some people made things out of old plastic bags, and like they really use everything they can find and try to make it to art, which is quite cool.
What were the reasons they even started using waste?
My impression was that, I mean, obviously waste is a big issue in Uganda, and also after COVID, there was a lot of waste. And I think at both initiatives, they used that space as a kind of dumping site. So I think starting these initiatives was kind of a reaction to this, and that they felt like they had to do something with it. And then they saw opportunity to...
Creative awareness.
Exactly, and creative awareness also on environmental issues and also health issues and hand with the waste.
I think they also talked a lot about that they can send a message through the art. So by creating these sculptures, people get curious and people ask into it. And in that way, they can also educate, which is one of their main goals. Mm. So just having like an alternative approach to reaching people as well was quite big for them, I think. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them actually... Just, I think it was Greg who told us that he just wanted to set up a social enterprise so that he leaves a change in like the community. And I've talked to a lot of people who have made a point to like, they, it's sort of like a big emphasis here to leave some sort of legacy behind. It may be through enterprise, it may be through marriage or so, like someone will find maybe a social aspect will be the legacy that he's leaving behind. And so, like, Greg told us that he felt like, felt like they were passionate, him and the families. So, and some of them, of the people who are in Masterpiece Development Foundation, were already eco artists before, but they needed someone who, like, I feel like they needed someone who would organize them. So when this, he's called Barnabas, sort of gave them the idea, then they came together at once. Good enough for them to like come together and then start the foundation and take part in that.
Normally they waste from like they talk about
just around the communities. They go out and they pick it from the streets. They try to get people to help with that as well. Some people also come by because they know that they're collecting trash. Mm-hmm. So they might come by with some plastic bottles they collected and they just do it on the run. But also they work together with, for example, bars, at least at Masterpiece Development and, Foundation. They have an agreement with one of the bars where the bar gives them the old glass bottles. Then they create something new of it. They make glasses to drink from and then they sell them back to the bars. So there's this circular agreement between the bars and the organization as well.
And Vlad, you were also very much highlighting how they could raise awareness among kids as well. So they could learn how to recycle and like, oh, here I have a glass bottle, for example. If I go here and turn it in, like I can also myself make it into a glass, and that's super cool. So they could kind of see the value in it. And I think that was also a big part, especially at Masterpiece Development Foundation and as well, which is super cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's like apart from like the buzz, I think when we talked to Plastic Talks, it was more like since it was a dumping site, they just used most of the material there to do like leave alone just the plastic saving. Looked at like the manure that is like biological garbage, and they use it to like make the garden and then organize the place. So they use the immediate community around, like if you look into like different theories, we learn like social bricklayers making do without your help. That's basically what they did to like work with what is available in order to actually start the foundation. So yeah, it's more of like the immediate community rather than looking far off. Yeah, we actually felt that maybe they work with someone who maybe collects trash, but like yes, get around, and then yeah, it's very, it's more of like the community rather than working with any commercial person or something like
that. And I mean, there's enough trash around and yeah, small amenities, so it's quite easy for them to get resources, for sure.
Mm.
You talked about awareness and like communities and stuff. Did they also tell you about what the reactions are and like if it is successful raising awareness? They also talked about they want to have kids being aware of trash and trash problems.
I feel like it was very much focused on, like, it really sparks curiosity, especially among kids. I feel like we asked a lot to, have you seen any positive response within the communities? And it was like, yes and no kind of thing. But, of course, people get more curious also when they see what they're doing there. And, and I think they, because they're also hosting workshops and trying to kind of advertise it a bit in the community. And I think in this way also that helps to... raise more awareness.
I think also a big part was the generational change. They try to, as you say, teach the kids how to to behave around like waste issues. And they were talking a lot about like getting to the grassroots of the problem. And it's quite difficult to actually educate people who have learned this the whole life to not recycle, to just throw their trash to the side. So they really try to get to the children and teach them from early on to have this generational change, which I would assume is working, but of course you never.
Yeah, I we talked to someone called Brian, and he was working like plastic talks. He was living an orphanage nearby, and he told us like how him and the kids, he trains kids to like do dancing, and they go for like shows and stuff. So him and the kids did change their habits as a positive. They even made costumes out of plastic, so it's like a good thing. Though they didn't give us like, I would say, exact figures of maybe how many people come in and how many people have come out changed. And so it's more like observing around and talking different people who come in and then they check out. It's not that easy, because you have to look at, okay, as well as like the community around, is it like much cleaner or not? It's something that you can observe. I did observe with Masterpiece Development Foundation, the immediate area was relatively clean. Mm. Because yeah, it was relatively clean. So it's has like, you can see that there is a change. But in terms of like talking to people, it's not that easy, because I may tell you that I have changed really, but like then the next 2 seconds you're seeing me throwing a bottle at.
Yeah.
So it's not that easy to measure, but like in terms of the outlook, I did observe that yeah, actually something is happening, because there are places I've been to and it's much worse. Yeah. Very worse.
Yeah. I think it's also very much like about this repurposing the waste, and I think that helps a lot, like both for bars and the kids, for example, like you turn something in and you get something back, and I think that works very well there. For the bars, they really want to recycle because they know they'll get a product back kind of thing there. So yeah,
and of course it also has a lot to do with some kind of activism. I think they also try to reach a broader audience, because there are no real like regulations sometimes by the government about recycling. So maybe they also hope to reach to more important people to actually achieve some change in the long run from the government and not just by the individual.
Yeah. When you look at, one of the things I observed that this, when we're doing the research, is like, you notice there's someone who told us like the government brings up policy and then policy is not worked on, the next thing you know it's off. It's more like, I do think there are policies in place, but we have an issue with implementation, I would say. So like even the few policies that are there, they may not be like really big policies or really strict policies. It's very hard for most people to actually like follow them and like, okay, we're going to do this and that. So that's what makes it a bit hard. And that's why these individuals who are coping up, like, in a, at least it's slow, but it's becoming a real force to reckon with, in a sense that they are tired of the government, waiting for the government to do something. And then, yeah, so that's what I think one of the primary factors into looking into some of those things. So, like, yeah, it's really hard because we are not very strict here. If, like, the police person gets someone doing something wrong, they probably will just like talk their way out of it or something. So if it will become more strict, I think, in terms of implementation, even with the few policies, then we will be able to like have waste worked on.
So when you like change something as big as a topic like this, or something that has been in place for so many years, there's also criticism or more like negative responses as well. Did like your artists also report about this, or was it mostly positive or neutral responses?
It's like we didn't hear any negative responses, I think. But I think maybe mostly it's probably hard to reach and to sell the art in a way that's like, maybe it's not this, it's not the same trend like we have in Europe that you're looking for a sustainable product, things like that. And I think that could be a issue. So like more challenges maybe in terms of reaching people with art. But yeah, I know.
Yes, I don't think they were necessarily negative responses, at least not from the communities. I think it's more about them being curious about it and actually interested. Maybe, I don't know how big the awareness is, but at least there is curiosity and people are not going against the initiatives.
Yeah, it's in Uganda, it's very hard to find active hostile backlash, I would say. It's more of like a passive rebellion. So like if people are negative towards something, they'll just either not give you as much attention. So like, yeah, you'll talk about it and you'll sensitize everyone and then they'll just like keep quiet, look at you and let it be. So I think that would have been like the negative aspect because we, by nature, we don't like confronting at least in most places. But I think when you look at Masterpiece Development Foundation, I do think we have had a positive, it's positive. They have not told us. It's mostly been positive and neutral, I would say, because the speed at which they have grown, even the fact that some people who are not necessarily, I would say, in the demographic of the youth, who are educated to a certain extent, we had someone who only knew like the local tongue, he's actually invested in it, meaning to a certain extent, they're having a positive, people are having a positive take on it. Even Plasticos is more of like positive and neutral. But then I would say if there is a sort of backlash, it would be more in terms of like the behaviors. Are people actually coming to them and being able to like take on some of these? And like the fact that Masterpiece Development Foundation now has a partnership with I think was it Sheraton Hotel?
Yeah.
To work on a floor and they got it through one of the founders, means that yes, Ugandans may not be like pushing them as much, but that's a positive response. The fact that they're actually having someone who is like, okay, we want you to make a whole flow of sustainable art is actually good. So I do think it's more positive. I do not see a negative. Ugandans seem to be very neutral on a lot of topics, yeah.
Especially also because individuals can benefit from it as well. So if they learn how to, for example, make the glasses out of the glass bottles, they can sell them themselves. So it also has an individual benefit, which is quite a good tactic of them, I think. It's
true.
Yeah.
You also talked about partnerships. And before you also mentioned that also like the public authorities recognize problems there and like also try to fight with policies.
Yeah.
Do they also kind of support the artists, or is there any like help from the public authority side, because it's like also helping solve a problem they try to handle?
Yeah, of course. I know for Plastic Talks they got some funding for like 3 projects, but it's not much, and I know they're like trying to send some applications in terms of getting more funding from the government, but as Masterpiece Development Foundation, they didn't have any in place at the moment. And they were quite good at saying, like, we really don't want to be like a donor organization, and they really want to achieve this like self-sustaining model kind of thing.
But they're also both quite in the beginning still.
Yeah,
and quite small organizations, and maybe if they get more attention, they could also get some governmental funding. But
yeah.
I think looking at that question, there is like with the observation, there is more like external people rather than the government itself who are helping these organizations somewhere, and they're relying more like Masterpiece from the Development Foundation was looking at like expanding beyond the community, even like as researchers or like you guys can actually be part and help us. So it's very little reliance on the government. We don't have like a set policy, at least that I know of, that is helping these particular foundations. So it's more of like we talked about the individual effort, really. And if, Lisa said, if maybe they get a certain level of attention and it's not just one, like 3 or 4 organizations, then the government may try to put in policies. But I think the government will help them more if they look at like the broader aspects. I do think like our education, for example, is lacking a bit. We do learn like in a very younger years, really. When you're young, you learn sanitation and things like that, but we don't understand like the greater impact and how to actually live your life in a sustainable way. Most of us will end up like doing that because of passion and things like that. That's why actually, if someone finds value, that is when they will want to be part of that initiative. But if they do not find value in terms of like monetary value or something, chances are very low that they will want to be part. So that's sort of like the challenge they have. They have to keep giving value to these people, then they will attract more people. But if they do not give value to them, then it will just be like a project, like, yeah, people will come in once in a while, they'll support, but they'll like,
yeah.
So that's sort of like the challenge we have. Policy-wise, it's not something that the country is so deep into but now, yeah.
It's also like they are all, obviously, we talked a lot about sustainability, but they at the same time all entrepreneurs. So can you maybe help us to understand a bit the business sides compared or like matched to the sustainable sides? Do they even see themselves as business people or entrepreneurs, or how do they see themselves?
They do see themselves as entrepreneurs, I would say.
Yeah.
Like there are two sides to it. There is the artist side, where the artists are also, of course, individual entrepreneurs having to focus on themselves. And then there's other people who are actually doing the business development. But they still pointed out a lot that the main goal of this organization is social change. And then if it works well, an economic part could be, upcoming. But that it's not their focus, for sure.
Yeah, I don't want to make it too theoretical. But like it's more of like a social enterprise, which is like a business whose primary aim is not necessarily profit, but more towards bringing some sort of social change. And it's for Masterpiece Development Foundation. One of the business developers, Greg, told us that this is a social enterprise. Really, it's a social enterprise. So it's like a business, yes. You're trying to use business methods to operate like a business. That is why they want to do partnerships. They want to be profitable to a certain extent, but not to give profits to the shareholders, but more to like have the profits work for the operations of the business and then have it expand. But while the business is actually aiming at, is it expanding for the social change? So that's what they're aiming at doing. So it's like, yeah, it's a business, but not a business for returns for the individuals, but more as a business that's going to keep pushing the agenda of like, are we bringing like eco change and things like that? So like, that's how they have managed to like merge the two. That's why they are like, they told us they are doing research on what are the different products maybe that they could go into, but specifically sustainable products. How can they make their art much better? Even Henry was talking about using different means of like melting the plastic. It's eco-friendly. Even the glass, they are using gas to cut the glass. So they're looking for all means. Like while they're operating like a business, they want to be a sustainable business. So that's how like they are managing to merge the two.
Yeah, and I mean, I feel like they had a very big vision for the future. Obviously, they do want to be more profitable and get returns in that way to be able to also expand. But I feel like they want to do that and ensure that it also all the time like generates social value. So I feel like it was very much focusing on how do we make the process as sustainable as possible from the beginning. So yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but they also asked us about our inputs from the business side, for example. So they really also wanted us to maybe give them some advice, or maybe we had some input on how for them to expand or go into a different direction. So there was definitely also an aim for improvement there.
Yeah, and seeking partnership also for the VA to be able to collaborate better. And yeah, so I feel like they have big visions in terms of that.
Do they earn a living from it, or is it for most more like a side hustle?
Side hustle.
Yeah.
No, they don't make a living from it. No. The only earnings they have from it, they go straight back into the organization. Yeah.
How do they sell the products? Is there like a gallery market or?
I don't think they sell too much, honestly, right now, which is quite sad. But they will have an exhibition at the end of the year, for example, and they also plan on going to markets, but they need more people on board to actually produce the products to actually be able to sell them on the market. So I think it's a lot of, yeah, someone maybe hears about them, comes by, and then by accident they get a client. But
and obviously the agreement between hotels and bars
becomes a
lot easier. It's the direct relationship. But it's, yeah, there's not a lot about like the trust, the relationship building, and they have like those for now. But
yeah, they're trying to use more of like the networks they have, really. So if someone like comes in, they'll tell that individual to invite someone else. And then they do have like, at least for Masterpiece Development Foundation, had like in the house, the headquarters, it's not like a real gallery, but like you can see the art displayed. So if you see something nice, you can say, okay, can I get this? But I think it's more like they're trying to create a sort of network. I think one of the days we came, Greg had invited someone. So like now that person came in, he also made glass with us. And so if he's convinced, he'll again refer someone else to realize. So like they're using more of like the social capital aspect to bring in. And they're also trying to develop their marketing. We actually talked to them and they had an issue with in terms of like the bureaucracy that comes with licenses and things like that. That's why they were not able to set up their social media pages because they needed a line that was going to be a company line. And so like they're trying to, so recently their Instagram page became very active. At least they have a few followers, but they want to try and
reposting our pictures.
They're posting our pictures and things like that. But I do think if they're very active, they will get more people because like art is, it's like someone told us, more of like how you sell, more of like the emotions connected. So if like they manage to sell it in the right way, people will actually come in. And
how did it make you feel like personally that they have such a good purpose, but at the same time it's not really running as a business? Or what also like was maybe things you thought like they could change about it?
I mean, it seemed like they were in a good way. It didn't, as at least for Masterpiece Development, they have a really good business plan at pace, and it's just for them about getting out there. For Plastic Talks, it was a bit more difficult. They were struggling a bit because they're also only doing these big sculptures, so they don't really have the opportunity to sell anything. So of course it's a bit sad to see that it's not running as it could, but at the same time we felt quite secure about them going their way and actually getting out there. And we also talked to them about maybe going into more of like the sustainable tourism path, because also from the Copenhagen Business School students, a lot of people showed interest actually, and that was something that was quite new to them, to maybe try to actually sell these art pieces as souvenirs, or get people from the outside to come to them and produce things on their own, rather than just trying to focus on the communities.
Was there like also, did they talk about like other specific challenges based on their business model? Just like also compared maybe to other entrepreneurs?
One thing I can recall is, since they work with creatives, it's quite difficult to build an organization and like how you imagine an organization to be, because creatives need a bit more room for free thinking and working when they actually feel like working. So I think that might be a challenge for them as well, to implement like a typical structure while working with people who are maybe not made for working at these corporate settings.
Someone told us like it's hard to fit the creative mind into a corporate structure. That kind of stuck with us as well. And I mean, yeah, I feel like it's also very, it came up in both organizations that it's very time consuming also to create this sort of art. So you also, you really had to motivate each other. So I think this sense of community is very much a drive for them to keep going, and they do want to grow. But also for plastic torch or something, they were more talking about like this. They should go more into the gas economy and things like that.
Yeah.
And also in terms of land, because it's a bit uncertain whether or not like how much you could actually... if you want to expand, they also need more land, and it's also expensive to rent a place and things like that. So there for sure some limitations in terms of resources.
There is also the aspect of like in any business, for any business to actually work, there has to be like demand for the product. And like one of the things I noticed is like even when the bars bring in the bottles, they are like they have to at least sell 10% of the recycled glass, and 10% is actually a small number, really. So meaning like there is also that challenge of how many people are actually demanding for this sort of sustainable art or like these sustainable products. So I think that's a challenge on their side to really overcome, because they have to be the activists as well as the people selling, which is like not a typical business challenge, I would say. But it's more of unique on their end, because it's like you're selling two products at the same time. You're actually selling the sustainability and the eco, but then you're again selling your products, while most businesses are just selling their products. So you have to go into a lot of research and find out which communities are better. And just like we told them, like, okay, tourists may actually like what you're doing more than the local community. So if you can find over attracting tourists, that would be better. So you notice like, it's sort of a different way in which they have to look at things. And I think to me, it's a challenge they have to find of overcoming as fast as possible, because like if you don't have demand over a certain period of time, then yeah, you'll end up perfect to be like a donor organization, and yet they do not want to do that. They want to be self-sustaining, which is actually would be a good model for any... there'll be a good role model for anyone who would want to make any social change.
Also like sustainability is like an often researched and also tackled topic in Europe. Do they also talk about support outside from Uganda, or also interest outside from Uganda? Because I mean, here from Copenhagen Business School also made their way there, and is there also interest or support out from outside?
Yes, I feel like for sure I'm interested in learning how we would do it in Europe, for example. And then, you know, they were also talking about if they would get up the demand for their products, they would also need to probably implement some kind of technology that could help them produce more. And that's also another question in terms of that kind of investment, and also sustainable technology or green technology that's also extensive. So I think we were like reflecting a lot upon it, and they were just like, do you wanted to hear some inputs? But it was not like I from
clearly they were the business consultants. But other than that, I didn't feel like they were aiming at reaching out of Uganda for now.
When we talked to Peter, the founder of Plastic Talks, he was actually interested in getting people from like out. He thought I was, when I was talking using this, was when he thought I was someone who was not from here. So like he told me like, oh, like not very many people from abroad actually call. And so at least for Plastic Talks, they are interested in like what other people outside Uganda who have researched on this are interested in. And because like he has a whole website of everything he's doing, so I do think he's interested. For Masterpiece Development Foundation, they had not thought about it as such until we brought the idea of sustainable tourism. So of course when you look at sustainable tourism, then you have to have people who are actually into the sustainability and social change. So I think now they will actually be more interested, but before they were more like community and stuff. So when we brought up the idea, they're like, oh, that actually was.
You already gave a little hint with sustainable tourism. What was like your main advice to the artists or business owners, how they can proceed with their business but also with their art?
Well, we didn't give them like an elaborate plan. But we did give them a few hints. Like, for example, the students of Copenhagen Business School are here. You've met two of them. There are 30 who have come. The two can talk to the 30. If 30 come and they are convinced and they like the art, and they did like the art, then they can follow you on the socials and then also spread the word. I did advise them on more of an incremental basis rather than like getting all happy and excited, then you strike, invest in a website and invest in a lot of things when you've not actually seen. So I do think if they move in and assess how they are going to do after the students of Copenhagen Business School interact with them, are they going to get more followers or more attention? If they assess that, then they may actually look into, well, that was the advice really I gave them. And then maybe to like find a way of modeling their art towards tourists, in a sense, they can make the product. So I feel like they had very nice, there are some small product I was using for the interview recording. I forgot it's like
like the thing you put underneath the glass.
Yeah, something you put underneath the glass. It was made out of papyrus reeds and polythene bags or plastic bags, mm-hmm. like pieces. And it was very nice and convenient. And like I could have bought it, but I didn't know the price. So if like they set the prices and everything for even walking tourists and things like that would actually help. So I think they are going to try and look into that area. Mm-hmm. But we didn't like give them like,
yeah,
very technical solutions, really.
I think also like we're talking a bit about making, especially at Mostnat Peace Development Foundation, to make their space like a workshop kind of space as well, like more attractive to tourists. I mean, the way they become buddy with a coffee shop and make it more like people actually want to come there, spend some time, mm-hmm. and bring their recycled bottle, create something, it's a little, yeah. but kind of, yeah, make it more attractive for tourists.
And sorry, like, an activity rather than a product, maybe, mm-hmm. as well, because we tried to make the glasses and it was actually a lot of fun. So yes. you can actually
yeah.
do your own souvenir, which is super cool. And they yeah. had some bottles of Ugandan gin, and actually it had engraved Uganda something something on the bottom. So if you have the glass, it actually says Uganda on it, mm-hmm. which is perfect as a souvenir, of course. And then you have it, yeah. And then you can take that home. It's a it reminds you of the place, but you also know you made it yourself, which is quite nice. So, yeah, maybe trying to sell those kind of activities that people could be interested in, mm-hmm. and then combining it with like having this maybe co-working space that we're talking about with a cafe and, yeah, making it a bit cozy.
Maybe on a personal reflection, how did the project and the research and changed how you see waste, art, sustainability?
I think for me, I'm not really an art person, to be honest. I'm not super creative, I wish I was, but I think we're all super cool to see how you can be creative in so many different ways. It doesn't have to feel like, you don't have to be an artist kind of to be creative. Like you can be creative and like how they use something old to create something new kind of thing. And yeah. It's like, yeah, for educate also and like spell a message or tell a story through the art. I think that was really eye-opening.
And that it doesn't have to be super big all the time. It can be as small things that you might take home and also do at home. And it doesn't always have to be like the big master plan of saving the world, but already small things and a personal motivation changes a lot, I think.
Yeah, sure.
I think to me a lot, I was actually shocked about like the plastic bags really being used to make those items. It's like because we tend to use the plastic bags to either carry stuff or to light our chapel stoves, like to that we use them for cooking basically to make fire and cook. Oh, so like
make fire out of
yeah, we use bags. The plastic bag. Most Ugandans use the plastic bags to like. To burn the chapel. The chapel in a stove. Yeah, the chapel in a stove. And then the stove lights up. Yeah. No, we don't use the plastic bags all the time. We just use it to light up the stove and then we'll cook. And they've told us like it's a very unhealthy thing to do. But like very few people have like a suitable alternative, I would say. So it's either use the plastic bags or paper or a few sticks. So like looking at it in a sense like, oh, I can just make something else. Instead, is actually very, very comforting because like there recently we had like what they call it, a waste slide in a place called Chitezi in Kampala. It's where we used to dump a lot of rubbish. That was a dumping site, and so people died because they were living next to the dumping site. Mm-hmm. So that the waste literally came and fell on and everyone, and it was very horrific. Really, the director of Kampala like was sacked immediately, and all her people and everyone was like, the place is a mess. And it was like a problem that has been there for like not just the recent years, but people were not like working on it. And so it's good that we can find a way of getting rid of that garbage, I would say, mm-hmm. and like use it for something useful. And it also helps me look at sustainability. Like normally we look at it in a sense of only environment, plastics, garbage. But like sustainability, at least from the Master Peace Development Foundation, they helped me. I looked at the aspect of, can people actually help themselves? Can people earn from something? And can our mindsets change rather than just only like the physical? Because when you focus on helping the individual, then the individual will help implement the rest. And so like sustainability is not just about like the immediate, okay, let us get rid of this trash and put it here under recycling, but more like, are people able to see value in this and see value in change, see value in like making the world a better place, and more of like there's not looking at profit. And so like it has encouraged me, I think, to risk more, because I do find it's a risk to set a foundation without any sure source of money or anything from it, and you're investing a lot of time like they do. Yeah, it may be like a side thing, but they do invest more time than most people do in side hustles in Uganda. So I feel like it's something that, at least to me, it's new and will stick.
Yeah, I feel like for me, it's also changed my perspective on sustainability in a way, because I feel like in Europe, it's still very much on a service level. Like, you have to show that you're sustainable now in order to stay competitive. While here, it's more like, first, we make it sustainable, and then we grow. So in terms like of change management, I feel like it's kind of interesting to see how they aim to achieve that first. Well, whereas maybe in Europe, it's like, first, it's been like profit, and now we try to restructure on a maybe surface level way to make it more sustainable. But here's actually, we're not going to expand unless we have it actually have like a sustainable organization in place. I think it's been super interesting to see like how do they view sustainability and how you could change it for the data.
What do you think you might change for the Copenhagen Business School people when they are back in Copenhagen, but also for you, Klein, after this project, how you maybe handle waste, but also how you handle sustainability, maybe also in your daily life? Do you think it will change?
I think it's a very different setting, so it's quite difficult to apply things we learned here to back home, and it's of course a lot about just habits sometimes. So I could see myself maybe being a bit more strict about sorting waste,
or more creative maybe,
or maybe more creative actually, because I think most people I'm surrounded with, at least, are already quite good at like living a sustainable life.
Yeah, and like we said,
and being aware of it, but maybe creative, to, like, because making these things you were talking about for the cups at home, we learned how to do it. So maybe we can just take that home and make our own business up.
I think for me, it's also, much as young here, it's also a bit like challenging, because like every time you're going to buy an item here, someone's going to give you some sort of product that can be harmful to the environment, especially how plastic bags are very common. So it's very hard for you to like, okay, I'm going to get this plus, I'm going to prevent getting plastic bags. So what we at least will try to do is I do think I'm going to try to reduce on products that will lead directly to that. I'll try to get like less plastic. So that means less soda for me. really. I do love soda. My tidingless soda, more of cooking food at home, and so that I do not have to buy and pack food.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and also like trying to see how I do think, at least from a I do love exploring things. I do think we should find a way of living our lives in a sustainable manner. So I do think the major issue would be what is the best alternative rather than just like recycling, but like what is the better alternative to use? Because if you have the better alternative, then you don't need to deal with the issues with the plastic. So I do think like it has always been a question, but like even when we were doing the research and everything, I felt like it would be much better for us to find like, okay, is it plastic? Is it paper bags? What is that thing that we can use that will be much better for all? It's profitable to businesses. It works for us as well, instead of us always having to fight with. Because, you know, human beings do not, like, will always be like a 10% of people who believe in like the hood and everything, and then the rest will either not care or not believe at all. So I do think like if we get a better alternative to most of these items, then we will actually be able to move in the route of sustaining. Otherwise, we're going to just keep like treat the problem rather than prevent the problem, and yet we want to just prevent the problem rather than always treat something all the time. So like I think it has given me more curiosity, really, to find out, okay, what could be an alternative, at least for me, and maybe in the future I could come up with something or suggest something, yeah.
That's also like going into the last question.
Perfect.
But one last round. What did you think this project teach you about getting started and building a business, but also like what resources you need and stuff like that?
I think that you don't need to have everything in order or at hand, that he can make use of whatever you have around you to actually find a purpose in it and actually make some kind of business out of it. And as long as you have this collaboration and sense of community, you can come a long way.
Yeah. Also, just follow your dreams. Sounds a bit cheesy, yeah. But I think we learned that a lot from these people, because they really did something they were passionate about, and that's so inspiring also for us at home to maybe not always take the route of what you've been told to do, but maybe just follow what you're actually interested and want to do. And then it will all fall into place if you're actually passionate about it.
I think for me it's more of risk. Business tends to involve risk, and I do not like risk that much. Looking into what the organizations are doing, and the fact that like people can actually just sit down and say, okay, let us move in this direction, and no matter what happens, we are going to just move, and we have actually grown. Like at least for Masterpiece Developing Foundation, they have been operating for barely a year. They prepared the whole place for like a year, then the operation started, I think, early this year. So it's so like, it gives me like the courage really to like say, okay, let me just risk on and do something. So in like terms of business, I do think like if you just overcome the whole aspect of risk and do not, I would say, analyze things too much. What is the possibility that things are going to fail? This and that. Sometimes, yes, it's good to have these models like the SWOT analysis and everything, but at the same point, you get like analysis paralysis, where like you analyze everything so much and then you do not actually do anything. So it has taught me to like, okay, like you have an idea, you have a goal, try it out and see what happens. Like if it doesn't work out, the least you're going to do is like lose some money, but in the end, you'll have learned a lesson and then you move on. Because at least for Masterpiece Development Foundation, they literally just sold the idea to someone and she told them, I have a space and you can use it. And then you have, like, you'll pay me as much as you can make. Meaning, like, I'm like, wow, that's... And if they hadn't sold the idea to someone, then they wouldn't have that nice space and done that. So I do think, like, removing the whole, I have to analyze everything. Of course, yes, you have to be sensible when you're moving into it, But I do think for me it has enlightened me to be like, yes, analysis is good, but it should not cloud my judgment when I want to start up something, because then I'll not actually start at all. Yeah.
I mean, that's a good thing to take out of it. Thank you so much for your time. And to our listeners, please share the podcast. And if you are interested in hearing more, stay tuned for the next episode.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you wish to stay in the loop or participate in our podcast, please subscribe to the Business and Development Podcast on your usual platform.